Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by M&A Moving and Hauling, serving all of Central Iowa for your moving needs. Call 515-490-2640 and they'll send you a couple of guys. Welcome back. It's been a wild week. This is Shane Vanderhaar with Brian Myers, and in studio with us we have a very special guest and sometimes contributor to Caffeinated Thoughts, Bart Munson. Welcome, Bart.
Hey, Bart.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate being here, and hopefully we'll have a good discussion today.
I think so. We've got a lot to talk about.
Bart's been on the show before.
He has.
And if you remember, he was actually in on the pilot that we did for this illustrious enterprise three years ago.
That's true. That has never actually seen the light of day. I wonder why. Yeah, this week has been... Good news, I'm back in my home.
You're no longer homeless.
I can flush my toilet. Win! I am so excited about that because, well, for obvious reasons.
The sewer line is repaired.
As much as I like the Econo Lodge, and I have to give props to the Econo Lodge, they put us up for a week. Now, obviously not for free. Their breakfast was edible.
Well,
but nothing. There's no place like home.
Breakfast is edible. I don't know what that means. It wasn't plastic.
I was able to chew it and swallow.
Oh, okay.
So
wasn't completely synthetic then?
No, not completely.
Okay.
So
you got this big nasty hole in your backyard, or did they get
it's
that?
It's a big mound of dirt right now. So they're going to come back and grade it for us. So,
well, that is good news, buddy.
Yeah.
How long were you out of the house?
Oh, gosh, I think a week.
Oh, yuck.
Almost. I think right at a week, because they ended up having to come out a day late because they ended up having a big project that put them a little bit behind. They were supposed to be out Wednesday. They ended up coming out Thursday instead. But at least they got it done, and they didn't have to break into the street, which that would have been
That's
a lot of fun.
That's definitely good news.
Yeah.
It was Cheryl doing a happy dance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Nice to be back in their home.
Yeah.
Missed my bed.
Yeah. Well, I'm missing something. My daughter, Aubrey, came back last weekend for my mom's 90th birthday party, and it was a great surprise, and mom was just ecstatic, and it was wonderful. I knew it was going to go by quick, and it did. And Dad had a tough time when Aubrey had to go back to Rhode Island, but I'm sure the Reverend Ives and his family were quite happy to have her back.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. So what brings you to Iowa, Bart?
Well, not so happy news. My stepfather passed away a week ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And we're here to spend some time with my mom and to comfort her. He was 90 years old and lived a good full life, so it's not as if this was sudden or out of the blue. But we're here. We spent some time with my mom, and now I get a chance to hang out with you guys. So it's been a good trip.
Good. Well, sorry you had to come back under those circumstances, but it's great to have you here.
I appreciate it.
Yes. Yeah, so... Midterm elections.
Wow.
Tuesday night. That was incredible. We have a clip from Krauthammer who kind of, I think, he really hits on the depth of what happened when there was even a change in Maryland. And I need to open up to the...
Maryland, the deeply blue state.
Yes. Well, looking, Maryland now has a split legislature. Well, I mean, no, that I guess... I was looking at a map. That could actually just mean a Democrat-led legislature and a government. This is a map at the Federalist Papers, which we'll bring up a little bit. But anyway, they had a shift in their governor's race. Came out of the blue. Rather unexpectedly. The Republican candidate won, and Krauthammer weighs in. And that's not the Krauthammer thing. Oh, shoot. And technical problems.
You know, you look at this, though, this election across the board, and you sort of feel like a mosquito at a nudist colony. You look at you look around and say, where do I start? There's just so many things to look at.
Yeah, yeah.
And all right. Now, that particular analogy is a first, even for this show.
Exactly. You know what? I don't think we're going to end up playing that Krauthammer clip because my Dropbox app keeps on closing on me.
Oh,
so.
Shane.
So, I know. So disappointed.
That's a great clip, too.
It is. Basically, just saying, that, you know, this was a nuclear event. I mean, this is incredible what happened, that you have Republican governors in Massachusetts, in Maryland. You had the Republicans win back the U.S. Senate. Republicans saw a gain in governorships. Republicans saw a gain in state legislators. They increased their majority in the House. It's just incredible. And, of course, in Iowa, Joni Ernst, you know, beating Bruce Braley.
Hand delivering the Senate over to the Republicans.
Exactly. And convincingly beat Bruce Braley. First of all, I'd like to hear some Democrats. It's not going to happen. But those who are whining and complaining about the Des Moines Register poll that was released right before the election showing Ernst up 7 points, saying, oh, it's an outlier. It's not accurate. Because it's inconsistent with other polling. Well, no other polling was done. I mean, first of all, if you look at some of the other polls like Quinnipiac, we need to figure out exactly how to pronounce that.
I think it's Quinnipiac.
Quinnipiac? Okay.
Quinnipiac.
I think Brian wins the argument there.
I think you know what we need to do is just call it the Q poll.
The Q poll.
The Q poll.
The Q balls.
The Q poll.
So anyway, they put out a poll that showed it a tight race, and even Jack Hatch closing in on Governor Branstad.
Seriously?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and not when I say closing in, I mean he was still behind by double digits, but it was like under 15%.
Now, there's a long held theory by many that pollsters in general are more interested in influencing rather than reporting. And I think there is something to be said for that. I saw a study right after the elections that showed the various races and the margin of victory for the ones who won those races. And when they looked at the average of polls, those polls were skewed 4 points for the Democrat or the liberal part of the ticket. And it just makes you wonder, do these polls try to accurately portray sentiment, or are they trying to influence?
Wait a minute. Brown. Now the Krauthammer clip is playing. Stop that!
I thought Charles was going to come in and refute what I was saying there.
My iPad's possessed.
You know what we're going to do is we're going to fire Vanderhart from running any of the audio.
Yes, that would be a good idea.
Oh, goodness. Well, one of the things that he says there is he says that this is going to be the biggest wall-to-wall shellacking that you will ever see. That's how he characterized this, in addition to calling it a nuclear explosion.
Well, and the nuclear explosion comment that he made was in response to President Obama coming out the day after the election and saying he was going to let others read the tea leaves. He wasn't going to weigh in on what it all meant.
Well, of course not. Because he'd have to admit, I'm a failure.
Right.
Because this was all about him.
Yeah,
I mean, I think he would like that because he's such a narcissist. Everything's about him. So this is about him as well, but it wasn't about him in a positive way.
But in addition to everything being all about him, those guys live in an alternative universe.
Sure.
An alternate world. There's something where black is white, up is down. Seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't perceive things the same way that we do. That's why it's so easy for them to deny the stuff that we think is just patently obvious.
Yeah,
exactly.
I see nothing about this being reading the tea leaves. This was a Louisville Slugger to the side of the head of this administration.
Yes, amen. And let's talk about Washington spin and how they see things differently. I just got the phone. When I was driving up here, I was talking with a friend, and she had heard Harry Reid say, well, the people have spoken, and they want us to work together. It's like, no. The people have spoken, and they want Congress to stop Obama. That's what they want.
Well, some guys have made this point. I've heard it more than once, and it makes a lot of sense. If it was actually the former, in other words, if the voters were telling the government to work together, if that's what if that was the fundamental premise of what they did, it makes no sense, because what they should have done, if that's the case, is elect Democrats,
mm-hmm.
so that the beloved, you know, president of the United States, you know, can get all of his initiatives passed. Well, that's not what they did.
It's hard to work together when you're so diametrically opposed ideologically, as well as with priorities. There's very little the administration and most Republicans, I'm going to say, even though we do know, there's some Republicans just like, I want to grow government slower. Yay! You know, but they still want to grow government.
Go ahead, Shane.
Yeah, but gridlock in this case is good, and I wish people would understand that, because we need gridlock. Because can you imagine? Well, we don't have to imagine. Go back to before there was a Republican House. This is what this administration did. We had Obamacare. We had stimulus package. We had all sorts of crap crammed down our throats. Gridlock is good in this case because we can stop President Obama's, you know, initiative and his agenda. And of course, he has a phone and a pen, and you know he's going to probably try to push through some executive orders. But I hope we have a Republican Senate, and I'm holding my breath on this. I don't have a whole lot of confidence in Mitch McConnell, but I hope they're willing to slap him down when he does that.
Well, to your point, Shane, I sort of equate us to maybe being members of the San Francisco Giants, you know, the recent World Series champions. You celebrate the victory, but it's not long after that celebration that you have to say, what are we going to do with this championship? How are we going to proceed? How are we going to make moves that strengthen our team? And that's the next step to this whole process, is to hold the Republicans that have now gained office, hold them accountable to do what they said they were going to do on the campaign trail. And, you know, there's still this schism in the Republican Party, the Tea Party at one end and the establishment on the other. How are they going to maneuver, and how are they going to get along to work together?
Well, I think Shane made an excellent point, though, about gridlock.
Thank you.
What people – yeah, you won't hear me say that very often, buddy. But
nice.
You know, one thing that I think a lot of people don't understand, or if they do understand it, they don't care. But our founders set up this bicameral Congress and an executive branch that was going to have, by necessity, a difficult time passing legislation. That's by design. People forget that.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a reason for that. They had just gone through a revolution that was based upon the notion that they had a tyrannical government that had been trampling on their rights, and the last thing that they wanted to do was set up an equivalent in their new nation where that same dynamic would be in place. So they purposefully set up a government in which it was going to take an awful lot of work to find consensus to pass legislation. That's a good thing.
If you categorize yourself in the same brilliant political thought process as Gwyneth Paltrow, you look at the Republican Congress as an annoyance and a hindrance to President Obama in his agenda. So she doesn't hold to your theory, Brian, about Congress being there for purpose and for gridlock.
Well, here's the thing. People like her, with all due respect, I suspect she's an airhead that knows absolutely nothing about the founding principles of the Republic. And I think there's an awful lot of people like that.
Yeah, I think that Hollywood's filled with people like that. Speaking of gridlock, the Republican wave stopped at the Iowa Senate. We still have a 26 – we're still – well – Democrats hold a 26-24 in a majority lead. All Republicans needed to do was flip two seats. And I was reading the Iowa Republican, and Craig Robinson had some great analysis that I mostly agreed with. That was some of which I've talked about before, and I think even on this program, where I don't believe down ballot races were given enough attention. And you could definitely see that. And that was one of the things that he admitted in his piece, was that this admitted as though he was complicit. That's probably not the right word to use. But he wrote about
Save. Otherwise, yeah,
exactly.
Craig is going to be all over you.
Yeah, it wasn't a priority. And I'm just one race. We talked with Crystal Bruntz with Senate District 15. Democrats held a 1,200 voter registration edge. She lost by 1,300 votes. Now, so she was at a disadvantage, I admit, but this was a winnable seat, especially when you consider House District 30, which Zach Nunn, whom we also interviewed, won, consisted of part of Senate District 15. It was doable. Chaz Allen was definitely probably the best candidate Democrats could put up in that race.
And they had a great campaign.
They had a great ad, but right there is the problem. That was a solo ad campaign that went unopposed for weeks.
Yep.
And Republicans never invested. I'm sure maybe they sent mailers. I don't know if they sent door knockers, but they simply didn't do enough. Sean Dietz, they pretty much ignored up in Senate District 27. He had a 2,000 voter registration advantage, and he still lost by 3,000 votes, which tells me he's part of the Liberty Wing. Perhaps moderate Republicans didn't want to vote for him. Branstad didn't go up and campaign for him.
And the sad thing is, nationwide, the state legislatures, you know, were going well for Republicans, but in Iowa, nothing happened. There were no gains at all.
We can't put all of our eggs in one basket. There are other races that need to be won as well.
And Crystal.
And I'm thrilled about Joni Ernst winning. Don't get me wrong.
Right, but Crystal, in my opinion, did a great job. And if we just would have supported her with some more money, some more ads, who knows what could have happened there.
Yeah. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Recently, my family moved into a new house, and we needed a couple of guys to help us. So I called M&A Moving and Hauling. At the Roloff house, maybe like at your house, moving day can be stressful, so you don't want just anyone handling your personal belongings. If you've ever had your church family help you move, then you know what it's like to work with the team of M&A Moving and Hauling. So next time you need to move, call M&A Moving and Hauling at 515-490-2640. They'll send you a couple of guys. 515-490-2640.
Hey, look here, this is Cy Robson. All right, hey, I just packed my first shoebox for Operation Christmas Child, all right? When we was growing up, we was dirt poor. I wanted to help out with Operation Christmas Child because it has to do with kids, okay? And it brings great joy. I put in some little treats, some toys. With all that, I think the box was full. Oh, by the way, they will not let me send any fireworks.
Go to ShoeboxSci.com to find out how you can share God's love through Operation Christmas Child. That's ShoeboxSci.com.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart with Brian Myers, who's faithfully playing the air drums next to me. Check out our blog or our Facebook page, Caffeinated Thoughts, on Facebook to see the video for yourself. You have to watch Brian Myers play air drums.
No, you don't.
It's very entertaining.
You do not have to do that. Then, please disregard everything that you've just heard.
And then we also have Bart Munson in studio with us. Bart visiting us from Ohio. Good to have you with us, Bart. And then on the line, we have a very special guest. We have to call him Congressman-elect David Young. Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio,
sir.
David.
Well, you don't have to call me Congressman-elect.
Well,
you can still call me David, but I appreciate the opportunity, and it's great to talk to you guys.
Well, congratulations on your victory. We're thrilled to see you go off to D.C. We're
glad the seat's is staying in Republican hands.
Well, now, wait a minute. Are we ever glad to see anybody go off to D.C.?
Well, we're glad to have you representing us. We're glad to have you representing us.
Okay, that's better. That's better.
Well, it was a great night. It hasn't really sunk in yet. I'm out here in Western Iowa to keep the commitment of making sure I stay engaged and am thanking folks and also listening to folks as well. And it's a real honor. And not just I'm in Red Oak, the home of Joni Ernst. And
oh, so, all right.
It's a neat feeling here.
And they're going to have a special election soon to replace her in the state Senate. So
yeah, sounds like it.
I mean no disrespect when I say this, David, but in looking at everything that happened with you in this incredible win at the end of the day, it has to be one of the more improbable candidacies in recent memory.
Oh, I'll admit that. I'll be the first one.
it was
quite a journey.
Yeah, describe everything. Describe everything for us, the ups, the downs. I mean, it's still a mind blower.
Well, of course, the ultimate up was Tuesday night with the victory, and there was a sense of vindication there as well because, you know, we won by almost 11 points, did better than a lot of people thought. We thought we were going to do that well, but it's nice to win it handily. But, you know, it has been a long, long long process. You know, June of 2013, my goodness, is when I got in the Senate race. And then I kind of saw what was coming there with Joni Ernst getting the backing of the lieutenant governor and the momentum she was, and then Tom Latham getting out and announcing his retirement. And for me, when I see challenges, I see opportunities. And with opportunities, of course, there are challenges. But we went through that door. And we were rewarded through that risk. And then, of course, you had that primary in June of this year, six candidates, five of us, you know, you got to get 35% to be declared the winner. Five of us were all in single digits from one another. I went to the convention, which was a spectacular day, 7 hours, six candidates, five votes, coming down to myself and my friend Brad Zahn. And if it was anybody else in there, too, I would have called him my friend as well because we did develop friendships.
Sure.
And then here, the Senate race, or the House race for the general between June 21st and now, there wasn't a lot of polling on it.
No, and I'd say the polling, go ahead.
People were looking at this race like it was, you know, young up two, young down six, Apple up three, young down, or whatever. And our internal numbers always had us up. And we just put the pedal to the grindstone. You try to stick with the plan. You can't control a lot out there. And the voters spoke, and we were very excited.
Sure. Yeah, I think congressional polling is very hard. It's hard to find accurate polling in congressional races because their sample size just isn't big. It's not big enough, typically. Two things, I think, one, you had a voter registration edge, so that was something in your favor. And two, kudos to Republican Party of Iowa for really stepping up on early voting. I mean, that really, any advantage Democrats have had in the past on early voting just kind of went away this year. And I didn't see the final numbers in the third congressional district, but I know at one point you guys actually had more ballots, you know, Republicans had more ballots in than Democrats in the third district. I think maybe that switched back toward the end, but I mean, it was a small margin.
Yeah, if it switched back, it wasn't by much. You can almost call it dead even in terms of those absentee ballots. But, you know, we were always a fan of going after doing the absentee ballot program. We've seen it was effective for the Democrats, so why can't it be effective for us?
Absolutely.
Right.
And it was. And, you know, that helps.
Then, David?
You know, obviously, the candidates and their ideas, and there's a big referendum on this president, too. I'm not shy about saying that. There
sure.
Was.
Now, Harry Reid would say this is the people have spoken. Actually, he did say this morning, the people have spoken, and they want us to work together. how do you respond to that?
Well, I wonder what the role is going to be of Harry Reid. I mean, his philosophy was, don't do anything, tie down the Senate, tie down Congress, keep his members from voting on anything tough, and it was a failed philosophy and strategy. And he may go down in the dustbin of one of the worst majority leaders. But now it's time for Republicans to put up or shut up and govern. And governing is not easy. It's always easy to be against Harry Reid and the president when you're in the minority, but when you're in the majority, the real business starts in the act of governing. And we're going to send him legislation, the president. And he acted in defiance the other day, talking, you know, saying, hey, two-thirds of the American people didn't vote, so Republicans, you don't have a mandate. I wish he would get a reality check, like Bill Clinton did with Newt Gingrich in the Republican Congress that came about in 94, where Bill Clinton said, America, I heard you. I get it. Let's work together. And we signed in welfare reform. You remember that?
Yeah, but I do not think that this president has the ability to pivot. I do not think that's in his DNA. Your thoughts on that?
Well, we've seen that he has not done that and not had that ability. And from what he said, he sounds pretty defiant that he still wants to use that pen and that phone, and is even threatening to act already and soon on executive actions on amnesty.
Mm-hmm.
He said, if Congress, if you don't get on this soon, I still have this pen. And we don't need amnesty, whether it's with Congress doing it or the president.
What kind of immigration reform do you think House Republicans could agree to?
Well, I would like to first see a standalone bill just that secures the border. I don't want these big, fat, comprehensive bills where you can tuck anything into it and nobody can read it. Let's slim it down. Let's do it, first of all, number one, a border control bill. That's got to be the first thing, because it's going to be so hard to enforce anything after that if you don't have the border control.
We need to have an applause line ready. And, you know, Ron, do you have some canned applause that we can play?
Here.
Oh, man.
Yay.
All right. That is exactly right, David. We've got to secure the border first. It seems to me like there's an awful lot of things we could talk about after that, but it's all pointless if the border is porous.
Well, and I don't know how you control the border. It can be, you can have a wall here, more border control there, drones, cameras, what have you. And you have to pay attention to the northern border as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about the law of securing your borders, and it's about Homeland Security is a big part of this, as you know, with what's going on with ISIS in the Middle East, and also the health of our country. You see Ebola, some of the other communicable diseases that have been identified. We need to make sure that we protect the health of Americans as well, and then enforce the law after that.
You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We've got David Young, who's going soon to be our congressman. He'll be sworn in January. So welcome, David. We're talking about immigration. And beyond securing the border, there's probably some points that maybe Republicans can agree with Democrats on. What do you think some of those touch points might be?
Well, I hope there's some kind of legal immigration reform. I tend to think that one reason why we have people coming in illegally is because of our legal system. It can be onerous, takes so much time. I think also cracking down on some employment practices out there. You know, we have certain guest worker programs right now. There may be an area to do that, an avenue to do that. But if there is a guest worker program, number one, we got to make sure that we offer those jobs first and foremost to Americans who are looking for jobs. Two, then given to those who are coming in right away legally through our system. And then after that, you look at the people who are here. You know, we had a system back in the 50s and 60s called the Bracero Program. It was a guest worker program. You had legal status, but you didn't get those rights of voting, of certain benefits and that kind of thing. And there may be sectors in our economy where we still need some of that help. But I just want to make sure everybody hears it clearly. The border's number one. And that's, you know, look at Chuck Grassley. He'll admit one of his biggest turnarounds in a vote was when he, for President Reagan's amnesty with the promise of securing the border. And, well, the border never got secured, so the border has to be first.
Great. So what are some of your, you know, when you get to Washington, what are some of your first priorities?
Well, number one, I want to make sure that we start the budget process. We have to do budgets. Look at the Senate did. I mean, the House did them. The Senate needs to do them as well. And I'll be as equally on my leadership if they're not on track to do the budget. And you see what happens when you don't do budgets. We're at $18 trillion in debt.
Mm-hmm.
It's doubled under this president. Not to say that Republicans aren't complicit in some of this, because we've had Republican presidents and Congresses who spent too much.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that Congress abides by the rules and laws that are passed upon the American people, members of Congress and their families. Not only is it fair, but also members of Congress and folks in the administration can realize some of the ludicrous and unworkable things that they pass upon the American people. And I want to get after these rules and regulations. I'm out here in Western Iowa, and it is flourishing out here because of our agriculture economy. But you have an EPA that wants to regulate water in a new way and define it in a new way, which
right.
could almost shut down agriculture. And not even that, but any kind of construction or development. And the EPA needs to be put in check. There's a bill that passed the House that died on Harry Reid's desk called the RAINS Act, as in rein in regulations. And it would mandate that Congress votes on these rules and regs that have a severe economic impact on our economy. It's bipartisan. It's what we need.
I think Bart has a question.
Yeah, David, I'm curious. You mentioned immigration, which is a pretty large national issue. The other two issues that come to my mind when I think of the national scope is the Keystone Pipeline and Obamacare. Are those anywhere on your radar, and what's the path going forward with those issues?
They're both on my radar. Keystone, there's just so many issues. The Keystone Pipeline needs to be passed. I've always been for that, and it's not just about the economy and creating some jobs. It's about energy independency, which I think has to be an all of the above approach. And it's about national security. I want to get off the trough of the Middle East. We can be energy independent here. There's bipartisan support. There was in the House. I think it's there in the Senate, but it never came up for a vote. And you had some Democrats here in this last round who were acknowledging that it's time to pass the Keystone Pipeline, who were running in the Senate. So
that's right.
That will be a bill passed to the president. Obamacare, that's going to be a tough one, but I want to see the House and the Senate pass a bill and send it up to the president to repeal Obamacare. We know what he's going to do with that, the president. And then from there, I think we just start dismantling the law and send him up piecemeal approaches to whether it's getting rid of the Independent Payment Advisory Board, that unaccountable board that rations health care, or whether it's the medical device tax, whether it's the restoring the 40-hour work week, those kind of things. I think you have to do a get at it any way you can, whether full repeal or dismantle it.
Great. We are almost out of time. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll have to have you back once you're, a full-fledged member of Congress, once you're sworn in, and you keep us up to date what's going on in D.C. Again, congratulations.
Absolutely. Congratulations, David.
This is Caffeinated, okay. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Nelly Chikwanda from Zambia, Africa. I have been involved in Operation Christmas Child for over 10 years, and I never get tired of seeing our children in Zambia receive your shoebox gifts. Packing a shoebox is simple, and in the hands of God, it becomes a powerful tool. Thank you, and please keep packing these beautiful shoebox gifts.
Visit SamaritansPurse.org or call 800-809-3882.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Recently, my family moved into a new house, and we needed a couple of guys to help us. So I called M&A Moving and Hauling. At the Roloff house, maybe like at your house, moving day can be stressful, so you don't want just anyone handling your personal belongings. If you've ever had your church family help you move, then you know what it's like to work with the team of M&A Moving and Hauling. So next time you need to move, call M&A Moving and Hauling at 515-490-2640. They'll send you a couple of guys. 515-490-2640.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, where we're taking a look at Tuesday's election results. So hopefully you're not bored with that, but you know, you got to do it. You got to dedicate a show to election results, especially as since Tuesday was so significant. We saw so much.
Hey, this change is when we need to celebrate, buddy.
Exactly, yeah. And Brian, you know, you shared a link with us that you'd like to discuss, and it's the from Mark Silk. He writes for Religion News. It's an analysis of the voter and religion, which basically shows.
Well, it's basically not a lot has changed.
Yeah.
I was kind of thinking that there might be more there with respect to, you know, this particular election than there actually was.
Exactly. Basically, evangelicals pretty much still voted Republican.
Protestants, no surprise there.
Voted overwhelmingly, including evangelicals, Republican. However, I think if you split, you know, evangelicals from mainstream, or not mainstream, that's not the right word, mainline Democrats.
Protestants.
I need more.
Whoops.
Well, hey, yeah. That's Freudian slip. So anyway, you know, mainline Protestants all tend to be more liberal. They always tend to vote more Democrat. That number isn't necessarily overwhelmingly, you know, towards Democratic Party, but generally speaking, that tends to be how they vote.
But on the whole here, there's no difference from 2010.
Exactly. Catholics can be kind of a swing vote at times, but white Catholics tend to vote Republican, where you know other Catholics tend to vote Democrat, not necessarily overwhelmingly so, but so they can be kind of a swing vote. He points out it's the other religion, not the Jewish folks. They still went Democrat, even though...
Yeah, which Bart was mentioning off the air that he just doesn't get it.
I don't get it either. Why you would support a president that pretty much has stuck his finger in the eye of Israel and constantly has back and forth with Benjamin Netanyahu. That just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and if you just look at the country as a whole... And look at the demographic of political thought. You know, the biggest backers of Israel are Christians, and in particular, evangelical Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, as we've been talking about, that group typically votes overwhelmingly Republican. But yet, the Jewish faith, those of the Jewish faith and background, go to about 2-1 against Republicans. So it's sort of a mystery, and we've tried to dissect that concept and figure out why, and I think we're still scratching our heads.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do just with the perception of support. For the most part, a lot of Democrats will give lip service to Israel, or they do just enough. But also, I think, like with Protestants, you have a difference in the Jewish faith. You have some that are just totally cultural and not very religious at all. Then you have the Orthodox Jews, which would probably be the equivalent of evangelicals, you know, in Protestant faith.
Well, we were talking earlier as well. There's a huge concentration of that vote in the Northeast.
That's true.
In urban areas.
And
they're just traditionally that demographic is always supportive of the Democratic Party.
Exactly. As well as one area where we have seen a shift, sort of, is with the other religions like Hindus and Muslims and who else am I missing? Others. Anyway, others. They usually vote 75% toward Democrats. This year, it was 66%. But there was a higher percentage of them who actually voted in the midterm election than last time. So, you know, that's a significant number, and it helped bump a little bit. So even though I wouldn't necessarily say, hey, the Muslims and Hindus and you know, who not, whoever, you know, won it for Republicans. I mean, it's just interesting to talk about.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about the numbers, but we haven't actually specified a lot of them. If you want to know the numbers.
Well, that means I actually have to know them.
Yeah, exactly. I jotted them down, so I have them here. The Protestant.
Oh, he was prepared.
That's right.
Oh, you got to do that?
Yeah.
Show prep? What? Oh.
The Protestants voted for Republican in this election, and it was similar, back in 2012 and 2010. 60% voted for Republican to 38% Democrat. Now, it gets even a sharper difference with white Protestants, 71% to 27% they voted for Republicans. Then you get into to the Catholic contingency, and it's still a Republican, but it narrows a little bit, 53% to 45%. So that's sort of a breakdown. It gives you a little bit of idea how religion plays a part in the voting process.
Exactly. And you know really why whites, Protestants and Catholics tend to vote Republican, right?
Sure.
Because they're racist.
Oh, that's right. I should have known that.
We just got to
assume that. That's the answer to every question,
exactly,
isn't it?
Racist. So, anyway, no, they're not really. They just don't want to vote for a socialist liberal.
All right, next news item. We've got a report here from the, I think it's the Aquila Report, speaking of some rather poor theology that is out there amongst many Christians.
Yeah, denying the Bible's teaching on sin, especially in related areas of human depravity and human inability. that right there explains a lot of what's going on in the culture.
Well, it really does. I mean, if we have a defective view of the defect that's inherent in mankind, then we are not going to have an appropriate view of the whole of life, really.
Exactly. Yeah, the Bible teaches that we are absolutely, utterly depraved. And the only reason we are good is by the common grace of God. And it's not in our nature to do good. We're inherently sinful. We're inherently selfish. We think, you know, so.
Now, the starting position for way too many people is that we're all basically good.
Yeah, exactly.
And it goes downhill from there as far as how you view the world.
But when you view yourself as being essentially good, then also you end up putting a lot more faith in human institutions than you should. I think this is why Democrats especially non-religious Democrats, tend to put a lot more faith in government than you know your average definitely than an evangelical, because I don't want to necessarily go there, because even a lot of evangelicals don't quite understand that we are utterly depraved. But when you realize we are utterly depraved, you know, you're not going to put your faith in government to be able to change things. Maybe we're just going to be constantly skeptical and a pessimist. I don't know, but it'll impact your politics. It'll impact just how you view. Yeah, just jump in there, Bart. You got to interrupt me. I'll just bloviate all day long if you let me.
Well, don't be shy.
Yes, for sure. I think, you know, the problem in this area of theology and the individual, be it believer, non-believer, or whatever category you fall in, instead of comparing the world to Scripture and developing a worldview based on Scripture, we develop a worldview based on feelings and based on personal preferences. And, you know, the Bible is very clear, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. There is none righteous, no, not one. There's two citations right there that spell out very clearly. We are sinners by nature, by birth, but yet some people just don't like to look at themselves that way. Yeah, we'll have an altar call and offering here pretty soon.
So, yeah, so that's something that needs to be addressed.
Well, one of the reasons why it's so critical is, I think this is kind of what you were touching on, Shane, is that if you think that we're all basically good, then that's where you get this whole notion of, well, if we just change his environment, or we just change his economic status,
oh, yeah,
or whatever the case may be, that'll solve all the problems. And of course, it doesn't.
No,
it just doesn't.
It also flies in the face of grace. I mean, we are saved through faith and by grace, not by works. And so many people mistake that. When they talk about salvation, it's about how good am I, and the Bible says it's not about that.
Yeah. Outstanding way to finish that segment.
Absolutely. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Recently, my family moved into a new house, and we needed a couple of guys to help us. So I called M&A Moving and Hauling. At the Roloff house, maybe like at your house, moving day can be stressful, so you don't want just anyone handling your personal belongings. If you've ever had your church family help you move, then you know what it's like to work with the team of M&A Moving and Hauling. So next time you need to move, call M&A Moving and Hauling at 515-490-2640. They'll send you a couple of guys. 515-490-2640.
How much joy can fit in a shoebox? More than you think. That's because you can pack a shoebox with toys, school supplies, and hygiene items for a little boy or girl in need. Your simple shoebox gift may be the only gift that child ever receives. Accept the challenge. Get involved this year with Operation Christmas Child and change a child's life forever by showing them the love of Jesus. For more information, visit SamaritansPurse.org. That's SamaritansPurse.org.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by M&A Moving and Hauling, serving all of Central Iowa for your moving needs. Call 515-490-2640, and they'll send you a couple of guys. Welcome back. We talked about Brittany Maynard. I think that's how you pronounce her last name. Last week, because it sounded
last
like
week we were talking.
Yeah, it was last week. It sounded like she was actually going to prolong her decision to end her life. She was suffering from a very aggressive form of brain cancer.
And it sounded like she was having second thoughts about her plan to end it.
Well, at least on that particular date, yeah. Anyway, because she was still having some quality of life. She was still, I don't have her exact quotes in front of me. Basically, I'm still able to laugh with my family and spend some time with them. I still feel good enough. Here it is. I still feel good enough, and I still have enough joy, and I still laugh and smile with my family and friends enough. That doesn't seem like the right time right now, but it will come because I feel myself getting sicker. It's happening each week.
Yeah, I think it's a day or two later from that being made public where she committed suicide.
Right.
Exactly. And we don't know what was going on behind the scenes. Maybe she had a really bad seizure. Who knows? But the fact is,
it doesn't change anything at the end of the day.
And you know, I wrote a post that was a little red. A few people read it about how suicide is neither brave nor dignified. And one of the things that out of this whole story, just setting Brittany, this story isn't just about Brittany Maynard. And that's something I wanted to make clear to people who, you know, disagreed with me. It's about the mindset that's behind that
right.
Somehow suicide is the only, we were talking about off air, you know, suicide is the only dignified way to die. Watching my grandmother pass away in hospice, watching my aunt pass away from cancer in a hospital, both did so with grace and dignity. Was it hard? Absolutely, yes. Was it not dignified? I find that offensive that people think the only dignified way to leave this life is through suicide.
Right. And I tell you what, the people that have been reacting so severely to voices like yours in that post,
mm-hmm.
that have been critical of this decision, the people that have been reacting so severely, we cannot remain silent and suggest somehow that this is something to be celebrated. It is not.
Exactly. And, you know, people are saying, you're trying to prevent her, you know, from this decision. You're trying to say she can't, you know, do this. I'm like, people have always had the ability to make this choice. Always.
Yeah. And when, the first thing we ought to say is our prayers are with
yes.
Brittany Maynard's family at their great loss.
Sure.
But you've got to look at the overarching principle here, and that is God is the giver and the taker of life. And we always seem to try to create this noble and misleading book cover on things such as, you know, dying with dignity, which is sort of the catchphrase of the states that have made physician-assisted suicide illegal. But it just simply masks the dark content of the book, and that is, that you're going to die, and we're going to help you die. That is not dignified, and that is not dying with dignity. But we tend to do that. We tend to try to candy coat it. But again, getting back to the specific case we're talking about, a very compelling case, and it's very difficult to watch somebody die under such circumstances.
Well, and think about the insanity of what the culture is saying. They're saying that Dr. Kevorkian is Mr. Compassion.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm Dr. Kevorkian, and I'm here to help. Please.
Yeah. And we're almost out of time, but I would just want to refer you to Daily Signal. They have a great article up by Nadine Newman. I'm for sure not sure I'm pronouncing that right. Anyway, check that out. Her mom's struggling with the same disease, and she has a different opinion. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll see you next week.